It's Wednesday, March 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, the White House defends President Trump's health care plan.
This is the only vehicle that seeks to achieve what people on our side of the aisle have been talking about since 2010. This is it.
Also ahead, voters go to the polls in the Netherlands. It's been a year since the EU deal on refugees. How's it working? The EU proposes its plan for Syria. A winter storm pounds New England. And a friendly ghost helps people fly on time. That's all on today's International Edition. Thanks for being with us. We'll start off here in Washington, where the White House and congressional Republicans spent Tuesday defending President Donald Trump's plan for health care, the American Health Care Act. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office released a searing report on the plan Monday, saying that if adopted, the number of uninsured people would rise by 14 million to a total of 41 million in 2018. By 2026, that number would reach 52 million compared to 28 million if the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, were to remain in place. At the White House on Tuesday, spokesman Sean Spicer defended Trump's plan as the last best chance to overhaul the U.S. health care system.
This is the only vehicle that seeks to achieve what people on our side of the aisle have been talking about since 2010. This is it. If we don't get this through, the goal of repealing Obamacare and instituting a system that will be patient-centered is going to be unbelievably difficult. This is the vehicle to do that.
The CBO's report says premiums are expected to rise in the first few years before decreasing starting in 2020. It also says provisions in the Republican law would allow insurers to charge older people five times as much as younger people, as opposed to three times as much under the current law. The new plan would eliminate the so-called individual mandate, which requires most people to carry health insurance or pay a tax penalty. White House spokesman Spicer said that the plan would offer patients choices in health coverage, which would make insurance cheaper in the long run.
But for the most part, the American consumer, when you want a product, you can go online, you can go to a store, you have choice, you can go to a store across state lines. If you live in Virginia, you drive to Maryland or the district. And shop around. With our insurance, we don't have that ability. There's no question that increased competition drives down costs.
House Minority Leader Democrat Nancy Pelosi of California, however, said the Republican plan harms those who can least afford it, the poor and the elderly.
They are doing harm with this bill, not only if it passes, which hopefully it will not, but in the fear that it is instilling in people.
New York Senator Charles Schumer, the Senate minority leader, said that Republicans need to abandon the Trump plan, which will end up hurting the country.
The CBO report should be a knockout blow for Republicans in Congress. They should heed the warning, turn back from their plan that would be a disaster for our dear country.
Republican lawmakers want to retain two of the most popular features of Obamacare, banning insurers from dropping coverage for anyone because of a pre-existing medical condition, and allowing young people to stay on their parents' policies until they turn 26 years old. President Trump has promised that his health plan will cover everybody and offer cheaper policies for individuals and small groups of people who buy insurance for themselves rather than getting coverage through their jobs. The president will have a campaign-style event Wednesday in Nashville, Tennessee, to drum up support for his plan. Let's take a look at some of the top stories in the world. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson travels to Japan, South Korea, and China in his first visit as secretary to the East Asia and Pacific region. Kremlin officials and Russian lawmakers are denying published reports that Moscow deployed a team of special forces and drones to a military base in Egypt near the Libyan border. Forces led by renegade Libyan General Khalifa Haftar are claiming to have recaptured two key Mediterranean oil installations in eastern Libya. Hijackers who seized an oil tanker and its eight-man crew off Somalia are demanding compensation for a rise in illegal fishing in Somali waters. And the top U.S. Marine commander was bitterly criticized Tuesday for what one U.S. senator called a repugnant scandal involving nude photographs of female Marines. You can find expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. Turning now to the Netherlands, the Dutch began going to the polls early Wednesday in a parliamentary election, with one polling station in Amsterdam opening at midnight. With the anti-Islam far-right lawmaker Geert Wilders running just behind two-term Prime Minister Mark Rutte in the polls, the Dutch vote could give an indication of whether the tide of populism that swept Britain toward the European Union exit and Donald Trump into the White House has peaked. The candidates held their final debate on Tuesday, with Wilders using his debate with Labour Party leader Lodewijk Asscher to lash out at liberal immigration policies he called Woodstock lyrics from the 60s for people who spent hours smoking a water pipe.
Meneer Asscher, hou alsjeblieft met die onzin. Het zijn Woodstock teksten uit de jaren
60. He said, Mr. Asscher, stop with this nonsense. These are Woodstock lyrics from the 60s for people who spent hours smoking a water pipe. That's what these quotes are. Netherlands belongs to all of us. But I'll tell you, the Netherlands doesn't belong to all of us. The Netherlands belongs to the Dutch. Are you listening? The Netherlands belongs to the Dutch, people who chose our country 100%. Your policies, your Labour Party, are the reason why the Dutch feel like a stranger in their own country, feel like a second-ranked citizen. Asscher responded that arch-nationalists, like Wilders, weaken not only the Netherlands, but also Europe.
U verzwakt Europa, u verzwakt Nederland, u wil dat Europa verlaat.
He said, you weaken Europe, you weaken the Netherlands, you want us to leave Europe. You divide, 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 and Mr. Putin will be the one who will prevail. If it's about a contribution to the Netherlands, then you can learn a lot from the Dutch with a Muslim background who wear our military uniform, from the Dutch wearing the mayor's chain who are restoring order. And if there are ringleaders, they will have to be taken care of. But I will never accept that the medical worker in a hospital wearing a headscarf who cares for people lovingly is insulted by you. Yes, they belong to the Netherlands. That's my Netherlands, because the Netherlands belongs to all of us and everyone who does his best. At that polling place in Amsterdam, Sam Godfried was among those casting ballots early Wednesday.
Just it's getting more polarized, and I think the direction that we choose for our country now will have a big impact on where we're going to go, because it's not going to go in the middle. It's going to go like an extreme direction. So I voted pretty left because I hope that we'll steer the direction a little bit away from extreme right.
Meanwhile, Regard Ibrahim says that watching what happened here in the U.S. election motivated him to vote for the first time.
We don't want to end up like how they did with Trump. We have like this PVV party. Like a lot of people, they vote for them. We like a lot of young people like me. They never voted. Also myself, I never looked at it even. For what? Why should I do that? And now we see things happen in the other side, on the other side in the world.
The final days of campaigning were overshadowed by a diplomatic crisis between the Dutch and Turkish governments over the refusal of the Netherlands over the weekend to let two Turkish ministers address rallies about a constitutional referendum that would give President Recep Tayyip Erdogan more powers. The elections in the Netherlands come ahead of polls in France and Germany in the next 6 months, when right-wing nationalists will also be key players. It's been a year since the European Union signed a deal with Turkey to stem the flow of migrants into Greece in return for $6 billion in aid. On the surface, that deal appears a success, as the numbers arriving on Greek shores have fallen by more than 90%. But as Henry Ridgewell tells us, aid agencies say the figures disguise the hardship still being felt by thousands of migrants stuck in camps or unable to find safety.
An abandoned factory outside the Greek capital Athens is home to around 600 people, including many children, mostly from Afghanistan, Syria and Pakistan. They are among the 60,000 migrants that have been stuck in Greece for more than a year, languishing in camps with nowhere to go as the borders through the Balkans to Western Europe remain closed. Aid groups accuse the European Union of abandoning its responsibilities. Declan Barry of Doctors Without Borders spoke to VOA via Skype from Brussels.
Certainly when we're on the ground treating the patients and we're seeing the suffering that is consequent to the EU-Turkey deal, we can't say that that's a success. In human terms, it's a failure. When these refugees are detained and held in camps, so we're seeing an awful lot more people with a profound mental health disorders, and that includes psychosis, post-traumatic stress disorder, a lot of anxiety and depression.
But European Union officials say hundreds of lives have been saved by breaking up the people smuggling gangs. EU Commissioner for Migration Dimitris Avramopoulos says the deal with Turkey is working. He says the results are already positive, as the numbers have fallen dramatically compared to how it was a year ago when 10,000 people passed through Turkey onto European soil. He says the numbers have fallen to 60 people per day, a manageable figure. Avramopoulos called on EU states to speed up the relocation of asylum seekers. France signed a deal Tuesday to take in 500 Syrian refugees from Lebanon. It is hoped offering safe passage will ease the pressure on Europe's borders.
Oui, il est possible d'offrir une alternative au voyage de la...
Valérie Regnier of the Christian group The Community of Santa Gidio, which is taking part in the resettlement, said it is possible to offer an alternative to the deadly trip through the Mediterranean by taking these people away from human traffickers. Meanwhile, Turkey's foreign minister has warned the migrant deal is at risk as the European Union has delayed giving Turkish citizens visa-free travel, a key part of the agreement. Brussels wants Ankara to first modify its strict anti-terror laws. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The European Union's foreign policy chief on Tuesday unveiled a plan to help Syria seal a peaceful end to fighting, improve stability, and rebuild a real political transition once it is underway. Federica Mogherini said the EU was perfectly positioned to assist in a Syrian-led political process under the auspices of the UN, as it was able to work with all the different regional players.
We are for Syrians and in the region a credible, reliable, trusted partner. First of all, able to work with all the different regional players equally. And also with a humanitarian presence on the ground that can constitute also a fruitful starting point to help local reconciliation processes, being a humanitarian player that has helped and not bombed the country, if I can be a bit blunt.
Mogherini said too often the international community has not properly prepared for post-conflict realities and has not had the necessary assistance in place when changes came. She said the EU plan is prepared for a time when the Syrian conflict is over and the nation will have to be rebuilt.
This time, we want to be ready properly, coordinating, and also using this element of looking beyond the current situation as a dividend for peace that could encourage different parties in Syria to make the necessary compromises and begin a political transition under an agreement brokered by the United Nations.
The EU is the biggest donor to Syria, providing more than $10 billion in humanitarian, development, and economic assistance since 2011. It plays no military role. As Syria enters its seventh year of war, a UN investigative team is accusing all warring parties of committing war crimes, including that of deliberately targeting civilians and civilian infrastructure. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Syria has submitted its latest report to the UN Human Rights Council.
The report documents human rights abuses and war crimes committed across Syria over the last 7 months. Human rights advocates say the siege and carpet bombing of eastern Aleppo by Syrian government forces and their Russian ally are among the most horrific and sustained attacks against Syria's civilian population. The chair of the International Commission of Inquiry, Paolo Pinheiro, says not even orphanages have escaped the wrath of violence unleashed upon eastern Aleppo.
Hundreds of civilians, so many that dozens still remain unaccounted for, lost their lives in the bombardments. Others perished due to the lack of even the most basic health care services. In the end, the government's siege tactics proved repulsively successful.
Pinheiro says eastern Aleppo is reduced to rubble, while survivors have been forced to leave their homes and face an uncertain future elsewhere. He notes the tragedy of Aleppo is being repeated throughout the country, as all warring parties continue to commit crimes against civilians. The report documents multiple attacks by Syrian forces against vital civilian infrastructure, including hospitals, schools, and water stations. It accuses rebel groups of indiscriminate mortar attacks in populated areas, killing and maiming many civilians. It condemns terrorist groups for violent acts, including summary executions and using civilians as human shields. Pinheiro says this war continues because parties to the conflict believe they can win through military means.
The increasingly complex conflict is partially fueled by the involvement of external actors and the financial, material, and other support they lend to the warring parties.
Pinheiro says the only way to end the war, which has claimed hundreds of thousands of lives, is by a political settlement. He urges member states to use their influence over the warring parties to transfer their fighting from the ground to the negotiating table. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, winter storm Stella buries parts of New England. And Tom Bonsi will tell us how fog busters keep people flying. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
VOA podcasts are a convenient way to get your information on the run.
VOANews.com.
Visit VOANews.com and click on podcasts to learn how you can subscribe.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Winter storm Stella pounded parts of the northeastern United States, with millions of people affected by heavy snow, high winds, and power outages. Storm warnings were posted for states such as New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Many school districts canceled classes as the powerful system, known as a nor'easter, hit the region. Officials in some areas warned residents to stay off the roads. The storm has caused power outages and a massive travel disruptions along the East Coast, although a slight shift in Stella's path spared the larger cities of Philadelphia and New York the worst of the blizzard. But New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said the central part of his state has been the hardest hit.
We had previously announced the tractor-trailer ban on routes 81, 84, 88, 86, and 17, and the New York State Thruway. That will stay in effect. We announced that the Metro North train service would be suspended at noon because Metro North goes up into the Hudson Valley, where we're experiencing significant snowfall.
Meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, Governor Tom Wolf said hundreds of National Guard troops would aid in the clearing of roads. From Cape Cod to Berkshire County and everywhere in between, Massachusetts residents were feeling the effects of Stella. The National Weather Service says that wind gusts as high as 125 kilometers per hour were reported in Wellfleet and 97 kilometers per hour in Worcester, where Tuesday's storm officially reached blizzard status. More than 60 centimeters of snow was possible in western Massachusetts. Rain and sleet kept snow totals lower in Boston and along the coast. In Watertown, John Breaker was battling the storm trying to clear a parking lot.
Oh, this is really tough. Once I scrape the snow up, I lose my traction. It turns to ice. So it's really hard to push this stuff up. And it's getting really wet now, and it's heavy, so that's making it even more tougher.
The extreme winter weather wreaked havoc on airports, with nearly 6,000 flights canceled across the eastern seaboard. Dallas Rose Kelly was stuck at Boston's Logan Airport.
They can't even tell me that my flight's canceled until I walk here and look at the sign to say it's canceled. The weather's part of life. The service, to say the least, they're terrible. But the weather's that's how it is here. You accept that with your travel. Yeah, and that's why these other airlines step up. They do what needs to be done.
The U.S. train system Amtrak announced on Twitter it had suspended Northeastern Regional Service between Boston and New York City until further notice. Amtrak was running on a modified schedule between New York City and Washington. As Dallas Rose Kelly said, the weather's something we can't control. Fog can be mysterious, chilling, atmospheric, ethereal, peaceful. But when it settles over an airfield, it creates delays or even danger. However, as Tom Bonsi tells us, at an airport in the western state of Oregon, ground crews take matters into their own hands when freezing fog threatens to delay takeoffs and landings.
Make-believe fog is a frequent special effect used in the theater and at rock concerts. The smoky mist rolling across the stage is usually created with dry ice, frozen carbon dioxide crystals. But dry ice can also be used to clear away real fog.
From dry ice, it collects the moisture, falls to the ground as basically just snow or ice.
Howard Volkman is the operations and maintenance supervisor at Rogue Valley International Medford Airport in southern Oregon. When Mother Nature throws travelers a curveball and freezing fog descends over the airport, he and his co-workers jump into action. First, they load crushed dry ice into a hopper suspended under a big helium balloon.
You guys ready?
The 5.5-meter diameter balloon is tethered with a winch cable to an airport pickup truck.
We detach from the vehicle and let the tether hang on to it, and we fly the balloon at about 500 feet.
A driver and an operator make slow loops around the runway with the balloon and its dry ice spreader in tow.
And we're basically driving along 5 to 7 miles an hour, and we're clearing a hole in the fog just for the airplanes to be able to see the runway.
The staff nicknamed their white balloon Casper after the friendly cartoon ghost. Then they came up with an acronym that fit, Cable Attached System Providing Effective Release. Casper first took to the air in 2010. It's deployed 14 times this winter. Medford Airport Director Bern Case says it's very effective, reducing flight cancellations to near zero.
It's all about dollars. Cancellations and diversions for airlines are very expensive, not only to the airlines, but if a person's trying to get to Tokyo and they can't get out of here, it can ruin an entire trip.
This fog-busting method only works at temperatures of 0 Celsius and below, so it's not that useful for airports in coastal cities where it's usually warmer when fog forms. Case says the Medford Airport provided the blueprints for the one-of-a-kind balloon system to the airport authorities in Spokane, Washington, and Anchorage, Alaska. International inquiries about Medford, Oregon's fog-clearing technology came from Russia, South Africa, and Scotland. While fog-clearing operations are still necessary for private planes and older aircraft, recent advances in precision navigation technology mean newer jets can take off and land with barely any visibility. For VOA News, I'm Tom Bonsi in Medford, Oregon.
And how did you celebrate Pi Day? Tuesday was March the 14th, or 314, and students at a Detroit area school celebrated Pi by throwing a pie in the face of their favorite teacher. The infinitely long, non-repeating number, which represents the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter, is one of the most widely known mathematical constants. Alexandra Felton is a math teacher who got pied on Tuesday.
It is sticky, very, very, afterwards you can't wait to really scrub your face because it's, even though it's whipped cream, it always, you smell vanilla for the next 2 days, so.
Felton also oversaw a competition in which seven student contestants recited Pi from memory in front of the student body. The winner was able to recite the number to 289 digits. The second place finisher, DT Deb, also managed more than 200. The 11-year-old fifth grader says she thinks people should try the Pi competition because it helps you memorize more things. Wonder what they'll do for Star Wars Day, May the 4th. And congratulations go out to Mitch Seavey. He won his third Iditarod Trail Sled Dog race on Tuesday, becoming the fastest and the oldest champion. At age 57, the Seward, Alaska musher brought his dogs off the frozen Bering Sea and onto Front Street in the Gold Rush town of Nome in a total time of 8 days, 3 hours, 40 minutes, and 13 seconds. He outran his son, defending champion Dallas Seavey, and lapped the oldest musher record that he had set at age 53 in 2013. He previously won the race then and in 2004. Thanks for being with us. You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. We invite your questions or comments. You can find our show on our website. That's voanews.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is @VOA_IE. Our thanks go to our director today, Tracy Carter, and our engineer and chief Formula One aficionado, Chaz Hall. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Be sure to enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Iraqi security forces continue to make progress in their fight to liberate the Iraqi city of Mosul from ISIS terrorists. Iraqi forces have succeeded in taking back Mosul International Airport, said the commander of Combined Joint Task Force Operation Inherent Resolve. Speaking to Pentagon reporters via teleconference from Baghdad, Army Lieutenant General Stephen Townsend said Iraqi forces have begun breaching into the outskirts of the city, with the Iraqi Counterterrorism Service, Federal Police, and Army moving along three axes of advance that clear the enemy from neighborhoods inside the city, but also enveloping the city to the west. "This enemy's been preparing for this battle for some time," said General Townsend, "and they've done an extensive amount of work to dig and build barriers to complicate the Iraqi advance. We've seen them use tunnels, shipping containers, and vehicles in the streets to slow the Iraqi forces down, and they've rigged many of these barriers with explosives. The U.S.-led coalition continues to strike those barriers with precision fire to help the Iraqis advance," Townsend said. ISIS has been dealt another significant blow in Syria, where Turkish-backed Syrian opposition forces have liberated al-Bab, the last significant ISIS-controlled population center in the Aleppo district. "Freeing al-Bab," said General Townsend, "has closed the door to ISIS' supply line of new fighters and its ability to export terrorists around the world. The liberation of al-Bab also means Turkey now has secured its border from ISIS," the general noted. The coalition is committed to the security of Turkey and will continue to work in close coordination with partner forces and allies to deliver a lasting defeat to ISIS, which remains the greatest terrorist threat to the region and the world, said General Townsend. The coalition continues planning for the eventual liberation of Raqqa, ISIS' self-proclaimed capital, Townsend told reporters. "The liberation of Raqqa will bring an end to the enemy's mythology that they were ever more than a brutal, murderous terrorist group. And then we will continue working with our partners to deal them a lasting defeat."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.